Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. Painter Darren Waterston's installation, Filthy Lucre, is the centerpiece of Uncertain Beauty, his new exhibition at Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts. It is a contemporary reimagining of James McNeill Whistler's 1876 decorative masterpiece, Harmony in Blue and Gold, The Peacock Room. A soundscape featuring voice and cello, composed by the New York-based trio Betty, can be heard intermittently through the space, punctuating the silence with hauntingly beautiful reverberations. I went to Mass MoCA earlier this week to speak with Darren Waterston about his work.
Thank you so much for taking the time to show me around this amazing work.
It's a pleasure. I've been having such a great time here at Mass MoCA. I've been here for 8 months as artist in resident, and we'll head back to New York, my home, in the beginning of the summer. But it's been terrific to be up here in the Northern Berkshires.
How did the residency come about? How were you approached, or did you approach Mass MoCA to come and build this piece here?
The museum invited me about 18 months ago to do a site-specific project, and it wasn't defined yet what we were going to do, and I knew that I wanted to do something really ambitious. It was Mass MoCA. It was my first opportunity to do a project at this extraordinary museum, and so I wanted to do something sort of way beyond what I ever imagined might be possible, and this museum is known for taking on these very ambitious projects with artists that I wanted to sort of follow suit on. So I was invited originally to paint a room, to do a painted room, and I am a painter, an artist who works mostly in two-dimensional spaces, and so or painting two-dimensionally, and so I decided I wanted to actually have a painting that you could walk into. And then I was thinking of all the great painted rooms in art history and was reminded of Whistler's extraordinary Peacock Room that he painted in 1876, 1877. And it is one of the great works of 19th century decorative art and painting, and a real interesting collision of both sort of architecture, art, decorative arts, and this whole conglomerate of these different disciplines coming together. So that was the premise of this project, is that I thought, well, I want to actually recreate the Peacock Room in my own sort of demented vision of this very sumptuous, beautiful space, and create it as a ruin of sorts, and as a space that is sort of caving in on all of its decadence and history. And the whole, you know, the tumultuous background of this piece is just as fascinating as the piece itself. The history of it is amazing.
Can you give us a quick summary of the history of the original Peacock Room? What was tumultuous about the creation of that piece?
Well, that piece was never commissioned by the patron, and it's a very interesting dynamic between these two men who were longstanding friends, and Leyland was the patron who was a great supporter of Whistler during his time. And he went away on vacation for a while and left Whistler to his room that he had just recently spent a huge amount of money and resources redesigning this room that housed one of Whistler's great paintings, this porcelain princess that was in the room. And he just asked Whistler to kind of go in and touch up a few colors on the 16th century leather-tooled walls that had been transferred into this space. And Whistler decided, who was quite precocious and quite a peacock himself, decided that he was going to paint the entire room, unsolicited, uninvited, that he was going to cover every surface and paint what he felt would be one of his great masterpieces, which it ended up being. And the patron came back after being away and was just astonished and aghast and not so happy about what he came to find, especially because Whistler asked him for a very significant sum to compensate him for the work of art that he was making. So it created a very tumultuous fight between the two of them that ended up in this friendship and patronage ended up in a very very messy and very disheartening ending for both men.
So we're standing outside your room, which is a space built with walls inside one of the huge galleries here at Mass MoCA. Let's go in and talk about what you've done. So this question mightn't be reasonable, but where did you start?
We started with a lot of drawings and a lot of renderings to create this freestanding diametric space that also had to be modular because it's traveling, and it will go to the Smithsonian next year where the original Peacock Room resides and be exhibited in close proximity to it. What you're hearing right now, too, is a soundscape that the musical trio Betty composed specifically for the interior, for Filthy Lucre. This is called Filthy Lucre, which is based on a painting that Whistler did of a very egregious, nasty portrait of Leyland after their fight had transpired. He painted this very mean and kind of animistic portrait of the patron turning into a peacock. And he is sitting at a piano, and the piece of music that he is playing is called The Golden Scab, An Eruption in Filthy Lucre. So I took that title of that from that painting, and because this whole piece is about patronage and money and lucre, it became the name of this piece. So yeah, we built with the whole team here at Mass MoCA, which was an extraordinary group of people. We took about, it ended up being just over 6 months in construction. And we started wall by wall, and the ceilings, the floors all came in simultaneously, and it all came together in pieces, and then created the space in all of these modular sections.
There's a great number of vessels, many, many vases and containers, some intact, some shattered. How were these created?
The original Peacock Room housed a really important collection of Asian ceramics, about 250 vessels. And so I knew that I had to represent these vessels in my version. So for months, as soon as I arrived here last summer, I went to every secondhand shop and antique store and found whatever I could that were these very particular forms. It was quite a hunt because they had to represent the original shapes in some way. So I went and collected 250 vessels, and including working with a local artist in North Adams who actually hand-built several vessels as well that are very particular to the collection. And so it was a wonderful few months of collecting these objects and then painting them.
And breaking some of them.
And breaking many of them. Once we installed the whole exhibition, I had to break about a third of the vessels, which was kind of terrifying and liberating all at the same time.
I imagine it could be satisfying to smash something once in a while.
Yeah, it is true. It was. I actually got to demolish my own work of art, which was kind of a wonderful, freeing thing to do.
Can you tell me about how the peacocks are actually painted on the walls?
The peacocks are the motif of peacocks is throughout the whole room. And they're all painted in gold, and there is some gild as well, some gilding. And the motif of the peacock is the most central image are two peacocks fighting, which represent Leyland and Whistler, the artist and the patron. And in my version of them, they're disemboweling each other, and they're literally pulling out each other's guts through this very elegant but sort of beautiful peacock fight.
I was going to say, it's a really striking and attractive disemboweling.
Yeah. Well, that was the idea, is that this room is still so wrought and so highly decorative that I wanted it to still have this kind of lavishness and sumptuousness, but there's still an underbelly to it and a sort of a darker side to this room.
You mentioned the soundscape created by Betty. How did that become a part of this?
Well, Whistler was always interested in combining the disciplines of music and the visual, and had always thought of painting in terms of symphonics and vice versa. And so it seemed very natural to integrate music and work with a whole other discipline and integrate it in with this visual experience. And the three artists of Betty were extraordinary to work with and really responded very sensitively to the nature of what this room was supposed to be and its history, and created a very dissonant and at times beautiful and at times very disorienting soundscape, which also includes whispered throughout vessels quotes by a whistler.
There is on the floor in front of us here and on some shelving a puddle, a melting of gold. What does that symbolize?
Well, it's, again, the whole room is sort of dripping and rotting, and it has a sort of sickness of sorts. I kept on thinking of the room as almost diseased, with its decadence and its assimilation of objects and wealth, and so what's happened is a lot of the gold has turned into stalactites dripping from the ceiling, dripping from the walls. A large puddle is sort of oozing out from underneath the desk. And then on the outside of the parameters of the structure, when you walk around the piece, there are gold puddles sort of oozing out into the gallery as well.
There are 8 chandeliers above us. Tell us about these.
These are designed based very, very closely on the original lanterns that were in the original Peacock Room. And these are made by a local artist named Deborah Coombs, who's a fantastic glass artist. And she painstakingly made these exquisite light fixtures that I glazed the glass, painted the glass, and then she built them in the most, I mean, they're just so luminous, so beautiful. And when we finally installed them into the space, I mean, it just took our breath away. It was really something to see them in the space and glowing.
They're beautiful. We mentioned the desk. On the opposite short end of the room is a painting. Tell us about this place.
Well, that is, again, based on Whistler's original painting, The Porcelain Princess, which was the whole impetus of this room, and the room was built around this famous painting. And my version of her is that she was dressed in this very beautiful orientalist kimono, holding a fan, very beautiful, and again, a sort of fetishized version of the Western eye looking at this orientalist aesthetic. So my version is exactly in the same proportions of the original painting, but a woman standing draped in a kimono, and her head and upper body has morphed into a kind of monstrous form where she's almost, you know, turning into some other a kind of a mutated lichen or rock formation, so it's very surrealist inspired, and also just again this idea of the beautiful and the grotesque, which is so much the theme of this project.
There are shutters on the wall with peacocks on them and a reddish orange light glowing from behind them. How did you make the decision for that light to be there?
Well, I wanted there to feel like there was a sense of otherness outside these shutters, and that you weren't quite sure where you were, and I kept on imagining this sort of apocalyptic light oozing from behind these cracked shutters. So we devised these light boxes behind that are sort of leaking out this very eerie and beautiful pinkish-orange light into the space, which is reflected on the gold and on some of the vessels. And so the whole room is about feeling disoriented and feeling the kind of instability of it all. And so the lighting was a big part of that as well.
You mentioned there's whisperings throughout in some of the vessels of quotes. Are there any other hidden treats you want to tell us about?
There are, as Susan Cross, the curator of this project, said, the devil is in the details. And you know, as we were taking on this project, we realized that the viewer's nose will be up against every surface, and that it's very unforgiving that way, and that we really had to create inch by inch, foot by foot, you know, a nuance and detail that was very concise. And so there are a lot of very small, quiet little moments that are discovered as you walk through it. A lot of detail, and also the sound, the way that it moves through the space is really something that you kind of have to discover.
Filthy Lucre is a huge centerpiece of this show you have here at Mass MoCA, but there's some other stuff outside of the room that I'd like to talk about if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. We can go there.
So we're in another gallery apart from your room. As you mentioned before, you paint in two dimensions usually. There are paintings hung on the walls. Let's talk about some of these. Where do you want to start?
The exhibition of which Filthy Lucre is the centerpiece of is called Uncertain Beauty. And it's looking at, not unlike the Peacock Room, it's looking at the motifs of sort of the beautiful and the grotesque, the deformed and the idealized. And much of my work has always been about this paradox and this visual paradox of how we enter into pictorial space and the things that compel us and repel us all at the same time. So much of my painting has to do with these themes that play out in different ways, sort of very idealized visions gone awry. So themes of end times and apocalypse and sort of mutated natural forms, and always everything in some stage of fragility or very volatile in some way. One of the paintings I have is called Bat Contemplating, which is a large vertical piece of that depicts a very precariously hanging upside down bat on a sort of desolate tree branch that is melting and is very ephemeral, and it looks like the thing that is supporting this bat is just about to dissolve. And yet the bat is still sort of clinging on in a kind of meditative state. One of the other pieces in this exhibition depicts a floating landscape that is also very precariously sort of hovering over this pictorial space that references sort of a hidden worlds, again, these idealized utopias that have gone awry in some way. So there's one very large painting here that has a sort of floating clod of earth that's actually very detailed and based on a Renaissance painting by Bellini that shows these sort of grottos and places to hide, caves and sort of relics of landscape that is somehow in the past. And so I'm always looking at the history of painting and the way in which space and spatiality has been depicted over the last 500 years. And so I'm very much influenced by a lot of early Northern Renaissance painting and some of the other later Renaissance schools, looking at the architecture of the painting, the way it's built, and the imagery certainly that evokes a sense of otherness or a place that you can't quite get to.
You said you are often exploring themes of fragility and end times and the juxtaposition of things falling apart or staying stable but just barely. How do you come to that as an artist and decide that's what you want to explore and continue to explore throughout your work as you create it?
You know, I think it's the artist's process, and mine in particular, is constantly in flux, and you're constantly exploring a life that is both a kind of visual aesthetic life and an intellectual life, and a world of ideas that are sometimes articulated just visually, and other times in written form. And I'm so much influenced by texts, by writings, by kind of historical points of view that then I find a way to translate into pictorial space. So many of the themes that I'm interested in are sort of universal themes that that artists, poets, writers, composers have been contemplating for a very long time.
Darren, it has been wonderful speaking with you. I feel so fortunate to have heard about this work straight from the artist's mouth. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Darren Waterston's Uncertain Beauty will be on view at Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts through January 2015. More information, including a link to Darren's awesome blog documenting the creation of Filthy Lucre, can be found at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.